I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order.
Every 5 minutes, someone dies while waiting for a compatible donor heart, liver, or kidney. On a remote island in Lake Superior, a team of geneticists strive to engineer an animal with human-compatible organs, thereby saving millions of lives. But these ancestors are not the docile herd animals they envision. Instead, the project spawns something big, something evil, something hungry. Ancestor by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler is available for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to the Patron Saint of Suicides. My name is Vince DiGianni, and I'm from Audio Media, the production company that makes the series.
This is Alex Dolan, the creator for the Patron Saint of Suicides.
We're going to dive deep into some behind-the-scenes stuff, talk about our favorite moments, the process overall. We've got three great episodes for you. This one will just be myself and Alex. Then we've got another episode with some of the cast to go over what the recordings were like and some of the characters. Then we're bringing on some of the people further behind the scenes, talking to the crew that made the music, put the sound effects together, and made everything sound fantastic. If you haven't listened to the main series yet, definitely go check it out, as this episode will have some spoilers in it.
Yeah, and just take a back up. If you're listening to this and you haven't heard the first episode and don't know anything about this series, so this is about a woman named Haven Otomo, and she's a daughter of a comic legend and a part-time comedian herself, but she's also somebody who patrols the Golden Gate Bridge every night and tries to stop people from jumping. And she had a trauma that happened to her 2 years before the start of the story, where she was on a packed train that ended up getting shot up, and she still kind of has that PTSD coming off of that, as and some amount of survivor's guilt. And so she's going into this with that baggage as well.
So I guess, do you want to tell me a little bit like about the show from your own words?
Sure. So the Patron Saint of Suicides originally started as a book. And so I also write books, and I was interested in this concept because I think at a higher level, I really wanted to have a way for people to talk about mental health. And it's something that people are afraid to talk about. And there are a couple of shows that have come out over the last couple of years that I think do a really good job of getting people comfortable with having this be part of the dialogue. And I wanted to explore the theme of that. And a couple of years ago, I read about a man in China who volunteered his time to go out on a bridge and talk people out of jumping off the bridge. And I thought that was a really compelling story. And I, until recently, lived in the San Francisco Bay Area, where the Golden Gate Bridge is the number one jumping spot in the United States, definitely, but possibly the world. And I like the idea of having somebody go out there and do that with their time. So that was the nugget of what the story developed into. And then I wanted to make it more compelling by having somebody who did, you know, tried to save people with her time being pulled into a case where she was being asked to try to help out a case where people are also dying of apparent suicide. So it became a little bit of a criminal case as well.
And obviously one of the major things for Haven is that she's also been through trauma that kind of feeds into her character and is the reason that she really goes out to the bridge, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing. When I started to think about this, when it originated with the man in China, I started to think about, okay, who does this person have to be to want to do this with their time? And I started to think about the character that would do this with the story. And I thought, well, this person needs to have some personal connection to suicide for them to be motivated enough to try to stop people from jumping. And so this is somebody who has trauma in their background. And on a lighter note, I ended up making this person kind of a part-time comic, because when I started to think about, well, what else does this person need to be able to do? And I thought, this person has to be very persuasive. And I liked the idea that when I looked into the types of personalities that were very persuasive, a lot of comics kept coming up, and people that that are really good at this, that can kind of steer the audience however they want. And yeah, and it makes sense when you see a lot of live comedy. Like, the people that are really good at it, are they can command a room, and they're good at getting people to listen and follow them. And there's that element I liked bringing in, mainly because I liked the idea that she had these powers of persuasion, and that was kind of a superpower for her. And I also liked the idea of taking something that was as dark as suicide and giving a little levity in contrast with something that was comic. And I think in real life, those things can kind of dovetail pretty naturally. But I thought in a dramatic format, it would kind of help balance things out.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. It definitely develops her character a little bit more, adds another layer of depth with how she deals with this kind of trauma. You know, I mean, she has a ton of jokes throughout the series where she's talking about her father who committed suicide, or, you know, past things that she's been through, like seeing a gun and being shot and thinking she was gonna jump in and save the day. And it's kind of this interesting duality to see how she puts that out into something that's supposed to be funny but also is therapeutic for her.
Yeah, I think the other thing is, like, I wanted this to be entertaining, right? So I didn't want to just club people over the head with something that was just depressing subject matter. And I thought, I feel like we're, as human beings, we're wired to talk about sensitive material more when it's in a fictional format. I think we're wired to listen to and tell stories, and that's how we process the world, and especially things that frighten us in the world. And so I wanted to create something that would be entertaining so that people could actually get lost in it. And this is very much written as a crime thriller. But hopefully when you read this, in the same way that for people that have read Shutter Island by Dennis Lehane or watched the movie, like, that is a movie and book that deals heavily with mental health issues. And yet it's couched in this very gripping crime thriller. And I think that makes it more palatable for people and more comfortable to be able to talk about it and take it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And you have a lot of experience with crime thrillers, right?
Outside of this, I also do some writing, and I have two books out that are crime thrillers. And it's a kind of storytelling that I really love. And I love the fact that you know you're putting people in these intractable situations that you or I would never choose to be in and try to figure out a way to get out of. And I think part of drama is serving up tension, and crime and thrillers are a good way to ratchet up that tension, to figure out what would these people do in this situation, what would I do by proxy in a situation this, like this. And I think that a lot of people, I think as I have a conversation like this with a lot of writers, where I think a lot of people write thrillers, crime, horror, all dark subject matter, because it's stuff that frightens everyone. And it's a way to deal with that and kind of expose us to that in a way that can help us not be frightened of it. And I think that, that readers and listeners appreciate it for the same thing. I think people like horror and thrillers for the same reason. I think it's a way for us to understand the world. And the way to understand the world, one of the things people want to understand most are the things that that scare us. And I think that this helps with that.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, that's always kind of the psychology behind why people enjoy horror versus the people that, you know, close their eyes and ears when they're in a theater. It's just, I don't know, two very different ways to deal with it, you know.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So talk to me about the kind of split that we have in all of these episodes. We've got one half being following Haven and the other half following Detective. So tell me a little bit more about Victor Blossom.
Yeah. So there are two worlds that are converging in this series. And one is the Haven Otomo and her world. And then the other one is a crime procedural. So there's basically in Oakland, California, which is just over the bridge from San Francisco, there are bodies that are starting to be found on train tracks. And it's initially presumed that these people are killing themselves by train. and are kneeling down in front of train tracks to kill themselves. And it ends up escalating into something else. And they don't know what it is or what's causing it. So Victor Blossom is the head detective on this. He's somebody who is a very seasoned police officer. He's somebody who's very sensitive and empathetic. And so he has kind of a natural inclination to want to help people in his role, which is comes out of me talking to a lot of police officers for the research for the story, and finding that it's not the grizzled gumshoe that has this job. It's a lot of people that get to see some of the worst sides of people. And they get to see some of the worst examples of human behavior, or just to get to see people at their worst, not bad people. And so I think they have more of an understanding of what, there certainly are people that desensitize themselves to that, but I think that a lot of the people that I talk to are people that have an even greater empathy for people in vulnerable situations. And that, you know, a lot of the, even the way that Victor Blossom talks, a lot of that, like his lexicon, a lot of his speech patterns come from kind of an amalgamation of different people I talk to in creating that character.
It's really interesting. I remember you mentioning that you did a bunch of research and spoke to a lot of police officers to kind of develop this role. And I know the first time that I read the script, I, you know, kind of leaned that stereotypical gruff police officer kind of way, at least for the first few episodes, till you learn a little bit more about Blossom as you go along. Specifically while we were casting this together, we were talking about trying to find someone with a much more soothing tone of voice, not really playing into that characterization of the police officer. So why is it that you really went that direction?
I think a long time ago, I knew somebody was married to a homicide detective, and I had this idea. I was, in my early 20s at the time, and I had this idea of how a policeman would talk and act. And he was actually a second degree black belt. He's not at all similar to Victor Blossom, although Victor Blossom also happens to know combat techniques.
Comes in handy.
It comes in handy, yeah. but he is somebody who had this very calm demeanor. And he was more of like, it was interesting because he was a slightly older guy, and he almost had kind of like a Santa Claus vibe about him. And he was telling me about this case, and he just was the most affable guy. And he talked about having to run down a suspect, and he was chasing him in a car. So he was getting into a car chase. So me in my early 20s, I was like, oh my God, I have to hear this story. And then they were doing a high speed highway chase. And then he said, okay. And then he pulled off and he went through a residential neighborhood. And I said, oh, what happened then? And he was like, well, I just let him go. And, the kid in me was like, what are you talking about? That's the end of the story?
How could you let him go?
Right. And he said something I would never have considered. He was like, well, I could have hit a kid.
Yeah.
Like, we were speeding through a residential neighborhood. And that insight was really like started to change the way I thought about people who really do their jobs right. Or I'm like, oh, my God, like, this isn't the shoot 'em out that we all are led to believe in reading noir stories. Like, these are people that he just had a very highly attuned sense of human behavior, and he had a lot of empathy. And he, he knew that having a high speed chase through a suburban neighborhood could do more harm than good. And so that I've thought about that personality of what it would be like to have that kind of responsibility as a police officer, as a detective. And I think some of the early people I met that really kind of changed my perception of that.
Wow. That's really interesting, because I love some campy police content. I've watched a ton of shows and even write a little bit of kind of thriller stuff that's very cliche police officers, and it's just the way that things, I guess, have been colored by the media and, movies, TV, and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's something that you did different here that you know, when we've been working on this, it's we've talked to the cast and the crew, and everybody that's read the scripts and been a part of this has remarked about how realistic the characters feel. And I think that's just something that, you know, you don't really think of. I don't know how to describe it. I guess you've found this type of person who is very real, but is very different than what you would imagine how people act in these situations. I mean, listening to Haven talk about the trauma that she'd been through, even for the, you know, umpteenth time that we're laying these episodes out and putting it together, it still kind of gives me chills to hear somebody talk about the trauma that they've went through like that. Same with Gibson and same with Blossom and everything. And it's just very easy to relate to these characters. And it's just such an interesting look into it, I guess. I would say because it doesn't fall into that campy cliche idea of how people are supposed to act.
Yeah, and thanks for that. And that's really kind of what I was going for. And it's not the fact that we all love campy cop shows. Like, I just moved to Portland, Oregon, and my favorite, it's hard to say it's my favorite show, but it's really watchable. It's a show called Stumptown. And it's fun, silly detective show that happens to take place in Portland, Oregon. Mm-hmm. And I started watching it mainly because they actually like highlight real things in Portland. I'm getting to know my new city. And so it'll be like, they'll be at a club that I know I have to like visit later on.
Oh.
But for people that are true crime fans out there that are listening to this, like a good example of what I'm talking about is if you look up a guy named Paul Holes, H-O-L-E-S, Paul Holes, some of you may already know who he is, but he's the investigator from California that caught the Golden State Killer. And I also listened to a couple of interviews with him, he's very grounded. He's not that stereotype. He's somebody who realizes that there are actual lives that are involved in these crimes. And he's not that cliche. He's just a real guy that did his job. And even for Haven, I mean, Haven's a very different personality type. And she, to get into that character, as somebody who was, I was writing somebody who was a part-time comic. And so I interviewed a lot of friends of mine who are comics, who do live comedy. And a lot of the way she talks or the way she tells jokes, a lot of those are related to people I've talked to. And also thinking about who this character was and what comics might influence her, the way she delivers lines or the way she writes her material also borrows from the stand-up material of people that I thought this character would be influenced by. So a lot of the development of these people really comes from doing a lot of research and talking to a lot of people.
It's really interesting. I feel like that relatable characters are something that writers either, you know, are very good at or it's always a miss, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like a good example, this is not a spoiler, but this is something that people will listen to on the show. There's a scene where Haven is on stage and she's performing in front of a crowd that contains a bachelorette party. And the bachelorette comes and gets on the stage and she has to kind of figure out how to deal with that distraction. And that actually, the scene wasn't exactly that, but that story, that thing actually happened to a friend of mine who's a comic.
Really?
And, yeah, he had a bachelorette party storm the stage, and he said it was really weird. But you have to kind of go with it. But they're just insights that people told me. Like they had this idea of like, if you have a heckler in the crowd, depending on who the heckler is, you can't necessarily be that mean to them because you might lose the whole room. And it's like insights like that from people that do this. I always get more. What helps inform characters and story is real life insights of people that know how people operate.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And I love all of the little touches of things like that. Like, it may not have been in your original idea to have the bachelorette party, have them go on stage and, you know, cause a ruckus, but adding that into the script kind of makes it feel more real, you know?
Yeah.
Makes the environment and the situations feel more real. I remember when I was laying out the audio for the first episode with Haven walking on the Golden Gate Bridge.
Right.
I had had it originally with a lot of like water sound in the background. And I remember one of the notes that you had told me was that, oh no, you can't hear the water from up that high. I was like, really? I've never actually, you know, paid attention and been on the bridge and thinking about what it sounded like. So it's just really interesting that, you know, you've got all of the insider information on a lot of this stuff that you've been there, you've researched, and you know, it makes it feel much more real. We could have had a lot of water sound and things like that on the bridge, but then other people who have experienced it would have been like, that's not what the Golden Gate Bridge sounds like when you're walking across.
You guys did actually create the world through the audio. I mean, we talked about how when you're walking on the Golden Gate Bridge, the predominant sound would be cars driving by you, because that bridge, you're, the sidewalk is right next to the road, and you can hear cars just going by you all the time. And so it's a different, it's a very much a different kind of sound than you'd get from another bridge. Some of the writers I really love, and some of what I really love that's happening in audio dramas is I get really inspired by people that are able to create these elaborate worlds. And so the world building for me comes like not only with the characters, but also what you guys are bringing to dimensionalize this with the sound and the music. I mean, it creates this fully fleshed out world. It's what intrigues me about the medium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, there's nothing more fun than, you know, seeing the lines laid out and then rendering it and finally hearing what this immersive soundscape sounds like for the first time.
Right. And honestly, you guys nailed it. It sounds like the Golden Gate Bridge. You were able to find train sounds that sound like the BART, which is, for people not from the San Francisco Bay Area, this is like the train that is kind of like the main commuter train in and out of San Francisco. And they make noises that it's a sound that is unique to that train. It doesn't sound like other trains. And so, you know, that even that first episode where you get to hear the BART car pull into the station, there's a certain whine to like the way the steel whines is like so unique to that system, and you don't hear it anywhere else. And you guys were able to really be authentic to that and, you know, just take you there.
Yeah. And I'm such an audio nerd with all of this kind of stuff. You know, you talked about your love of audio dramas and working with some of our audio engineers on this kind of stuff, who we'll speak to in, I think, a later episode of this little series that we're going to do behind the scenes. I'm sure our audio engineer, Eric, will love to tell you about how he made a bunch of the different sound effects and things like that. But you're right. We were able to find a Foley pack that was actual train recordings from the San Francisco Bay Area, which is really interesting.
Yeah, and it helped make it real. I mean, I think that's the, like, I loved being able to collaborate with you and the whole team on this, because it was more about, there's a certain experience you get when you write a book, and I love that, and I love being a reader too. In the last couple of years, I really wanted to explore audio dramas, because I just fell in love with what people are doing with this medium right now. And it's exciting stuff, and especially the sound design for some of these shows is elevated to the point where it really, it's like being in a movie, just all audio, and you were able to step into these elaborate worlds created just by sound. And I just was really impressed by that, and it was really I feel like, in a way, like you took the writing and kind of brought it to life.
So what was the reason that you decided to go with audio drama? What drew you into kind of adapting this novel that you had and putting it into the audio space?
I think it's the fact that 3 years ago, I found myself in a car more than I've been for most of my life. So I grew up in Boston, and so I grew up in a walking city, and I was like, either I was riding public transit or riding a bike around, and I was in a part of the San Francisco Bay Area where I was just driving around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of years ago, I started listening to audio dramas, and I was so excited by them. I was immediately pulled into it. And even I think to a lesser degree, but a lot of people are doing great things with audiobooks. For people that know Max Brooks's book, World War Z, it's one of the best audiobooks I've ever heard. And he has this full cast of A-list talent that's helped create that book. But I was really intrigued by how people can tell story just with no visuals, because we're so wired to need to see things. The idea that you can bring something to life without that is really intriguing to me. Hearing the way people actually write specifically for the medium, so that there's a special weight placed on certain sounds, and how you can dramatize that, how you can create little blind spots because you can't see things in audio dramas. It creates a special way of being able to write for that medium. And I just got excited about it. It was like, and also the fact that it's like this, it's, I know, like, everyone's going to listen to this and say, yeah, it's been around for 100 years. I'm aware of it.
Yep.
But this kind of new resurgence of audio drama that's come back is, it's also kind of exciting because people are, it's new enough that people are trying different things. And I feel like new voices are getting in the mix. And I like the idea of being one of those voices.
For sure. I mean, it's a great time to listen to audio fiction nowadays, whether it's audiobooks or audio dramas. And I think this show kind of rides that line in between, which is really interesting. Obviously, it started out as a novel and it was adapted into this podcast format. But we do things a little bit differently than a lot of audio dramas will do. And we do some things that audiobooks do, in the sense that there's a narrator, there's, you know, kind of this third person omniscient thing for a lot of this stuff. So it's really interesting that it kind of rides that line in between.
And I was a little hesitant in terms of that kind of style too, about like whether or not to have an actual narrator. But I had been, some of the shows I really love actually do that. And what I liked it, when it's done well, I like the fact that the narrator gives you a chance to do exposition. It gives you a chance to actually fill out the scene more for people that can't necessarily see everything.
And Richie absolutely killed that role too. It was so great to get him as the narrator.
Yeah, there's an actor named Richie Ammons who's the voice of our narrator, and just has the most gorgeous voice. He could have done the whole thing and it would still be a lot of fun to listen to. Yeah,
we could. It could have been an audiobook just narrated by him, and still would have been great.
Yeah.
So I remember when we were working on kind of adapting the script, you know, I had read through it and gave you some notes and direction on things for audio drama. One of the things that always stuck out to me was that, obviously, this coming from a novel format, Haven would say something and then we would have something in the script that said, you know, sound effect of XYZ, like Haven's narration would say, my phone buzzed, and then there'd be a sound effect that was like, you know, phone buzzing sound. And we decided to remove a lot of that stuff and kind of work with the medium so that we would just have the phone vibrate and kind of interrupt her in the middle of her voiceover exposition. So I think it kind of turned out in an interesting space to where the narrator and Haven can kind of like both give you these larger blocks of exposition and tell you about things that happened in the past and all that. But they're also in the current time, so things happen around them, you know, stuff interrupts them and things like that.
Yeah, and I think your insights on that were invaluable, and I think that I like the fact that we still kept some of that narration in there in a way, because at least for this season, we're still establishing what this world is. We're still kind of, you know, so I like a little bit more exposition, I think, kind of helps. It would help me as a listener be able to understand the world more. And I think once you get that established, it's kind of like every superhero movie is at first an origin story. And then once you get that origin story out of the way, then you can like build off that and people kind of know the world they're inhabiting. I think you were great in terms of giving me feedback to try to pull it more into writing for this medium.
You've mentioned a couple different times, I don't think I've ever asked you about it, you mentioned superheroes and, you know, kind of Haven's superpower. Did you want anything to be kind of you know, sci-fi? Like, does she have a superpower of persuasion? Is it just kind of like a normal person? Where are you with that?
I think I just like seeing people that are good at things. Like, you know, I think it's always fun. Some kind of skill set that you know, and for her, it made logical sense for her to have a power of persuasion given what she does and given her function in the story. I don't know. I mean, it's even like, it goes back to Sherlock Holmes. Like, I think people just like the fact that he's good at stuff.
Yeah. It's interesting though. Yeah. I mean, when you had described it to me, you said, you know, super, well, kind of superpowers of persuasion and things like that. And I was like, oh, cool. It's going to be sci-fi. And then, you know, we got into it a little bit more and I was like, no, she's just great at talking to people, whatever way it is.
You right. know? Well, I'll give you an example. I will watch sports at home. Like I won't necessarily want to turn on a football game, but if you bring me to any live sporting event in any sport, it could be roller derby or football or whatever, I'll immediately get sucked in. And part of it is just the appeal of me looking at somebody who's really gifted at doing what they do. And I'll be the same way if I go to ballet, just seeing a human being who's really gifted at something is really compelling for me. And so I'll be drawn in. So I tend to try to write people that that I would be drawn to.
Hmm. That's interesting. So thinking about the process of the first episode, I mean, we started working together, I think it was maybe October of 2019. Does that sound right?
It sounds like it was September, October.
September,
yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, we can talk about the process a little bit. We'd like to get into it a little bit more as we bring on some of the actors who are a part of the show and some audio engineers and things. But we've been working on episode one for a really long time now. We're currently recording this in April, towards the end of April, and we've just got episode one finalized. So it's been a long process.
It has, but it's also been a lot of fun. I mean, and I'm hoping that for people that are listening, that I'm hoping that translates to your experience we were lucky enough to work with a full cast of really talented actors, and the music and the Foley are amazing. And I as somebody who's kind of new to this field, just being able to have you kind of guide me along in this process has been amazing. But also I've just been really impressed by the amount of talent that's out there that can put this together.
Oh yeah. And we can talk about it when we bring the cast on here, but we did all of the recording for this remotely, which it might be pretty standard in a lot of audio dramas nowadays, but I think we got some really good dialogue and emotion from people who may be sitting, you know, in a closet with some foam padding, you know?
I remember hearing that there are people like Prince or like even Barbara Streisand that did all their vocals at their home studio remotely. And I remember thinking that was strange, because part of what I thought was really great about the recording process is getting everybody together in the same physical place. And now going through this process, like seeing how it's possible to get those performances in we're in two different cities and then the actor will be in a third city, and had to do it completely remote. It changed the way I thought about that and what's possible with digital platforms now.
It would have been a ton of fun to have everybody in the same room at the same time recording, you know, but I don't know if we'd ever be able to do that right now.
I know. Well, now.
Well, now, yeah. Especially, yes. So do you have a favorite moment from working on this stuff so far? Or, you know, what was your reaction to hearing the episode when it was finally put together?
Hearing that first episode was amazing for me. I think just there's an initial scene where the gunfight on the train that kind of sets everything in motion is done so well with the music that ratchets up the tension, and the way the sound effects are handled, and the way all these different voices are being brought in to texturize that scene. It's so it brought this life to the source material that was really, really exciting for me, and I hope will be for people listening to it.
I hope so too. It's like I said a little earlier, you know, even listening back to these episodes for the fifth, sixth, seventh time, trying to get them perfect, I still feel that kind of same feeling that you just mentioned, you know, listening to Haven in that first scene especially.
Yeah, although I will give a favorite moment aside from that, which this is not a spoiler, I don't think. but I'll speak very vaguely about who at one point is getting their head dunked underwater.
Oh, yeah.
And listening to the actor's takes that, like, the actor, like, actually probably, you know, was in a bathroom or something and kind of did it on his own. It was just, just delightful to hear him try to do this, like, in a vacuum.
No, that was definitely fun.
Yeah.
I think one of my favorite moments was when we had AJ on, when he was doing a lot of his lines towards the later episodes of the season. You know, just hearing the emotion that he was able to get in his voice for a lot of these scenes was just, it was amazing. Working with him was just like an outstanding experience for me. And that was probably one of my favorite recording sessions that we'd ever done.
Yeah, I was really impressed by AJ and everyone in this cast. And I think there was another, so when we were recording with Lewis, there's a point where we went through a pretty heavy scene, and at the end of it, he just had this sigh. He had to, like, take himself to an emotional place that was uncomfortable. And at the end of it, he just said, I gotta hug my kids.
Yeah.
and so it was, you know, and the point of that scene was to make people squirm. So I think it did its job.
Yeah, no, and it was such a fun experience to record all of these. Our next episode, we'll be bringing on Alyssa and Rob, who played Haven and Victor Blossom, you know, so we can talk a little bit more about this kind of stuff then. But I remember pretty early on in our recording process, you just yelled Lucha Libre after a particularly intense scene. You know, we had just finished it, and it was kind of silent for a second, and you just said, Lucha Libre! And then we started doing that as, like, our
sign off. Yeah.
Yeah. Our sign off. Yeah. So that, you know, lighten the mood, be a little funny kind of thing. And it was just such an interesting, you know, we're recording these really heavy scenes and then kind of ending it like that. And we had fun during it, you know?
Yeah. You know, I'm really heavily influenced by directors that have a play, on their projects. And I think it translates to, I want people to sense that there was, like, a high creative energy going into this, but there's a director that is actually very popular now named Taika Waititi, I believe if you pronounce his name. But he did Jojo Rabbit, and he did What We Do in the Shadows, and it's interesting seeing shots of him behind the set because he's like a little kid, and it brings out this sense of play that I think. Makes his movies different and magical. And I just like the idea of having that sense of play with people that we work with.
No, it's true though. While we were recording a lot of these and, you know, going through and cutting the audio, you can always see when a scene ended or when we decided to talk about it and kind of recouple for, you know, some feedback, because the volume levels on a lot of these audio clips always spiked, something like that, a group of us laughing. So if you line a lot of these audio clips up, you can see silence for you and I while Alyssa's performing. And then at the very end, there's just like a big spike because we were all like, that was awesome. So lots of fun. One last thing I did want to bring up. I want to talk about the charity and why, you know, we decided to try to link this and make it something impactful for mental health.
So the charity that we chose is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, or NAMI. If you want to check them out, they're at NAMI.org. And the way I found out about them is, so in the other writing that I do, I'm friends with a couple of writers, and some of them are actually practicing psychologists, and got advice from them on people that were just doing good work in the field. And a lot of people had mentioned these guys. And so we looked into this a little bit. And part of it is this goes back to this high level idea of trying to invite people to talk about mental health. And I wanted to tie that into something real. And if people wanted to get involved personally or support people that were doing the work, I wanted to have one foot in the real world and try to give people that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And I remember early on in the process too, you and I discuss the title of the show, which was originally what?
So when it was being pitched as a book, I was persuaded by some folks on the writing side to try to change the title to The Patron Saint of Survivors, because they thought people would be put off by the word suicide. Mm-hmm.
But that was something that you really embraced with the rest of this, right?
In the story that we're telling, I feel like it's a bit disingenuous to try to soften the blow in the title. I just thought it was weird. And I think everyone that I talked to, like, this is sensitive subject matter. And I think part of it is that I've always been really drawn to writers that are not afraid to dig into sensitive topics. And I think that it's really, for me, those kind of writers really inspire me. And so I wanted to lean into this hard. So I'm hoping that as a listener, when you listen to this, know that, you know, this is a story that was crafted with love and empathy to people that are these characters represent in the real world. But I didn't want to water this down, because I think that doesn't treat the subject matter with the respect that it deserves.
And I think it turned out all the better for it. There are some really impactful scenes here, and a lot of things are brought up that I think people need to talk about. People need to be able to process that kind of emotion and that kind of trauma.
Yeah, and know that just know that on the production side, Vince and I weren't just like sitting at home drinking ourselves to death while we were making this. Like there was fun and joy that went into it. And I'm hoping that, you know, you come for the crime story and you kind of stay for the deeper issues and the characters.
Mm-hmm. That's a great way to put it. Oh, favorite audio drama, wanted to ask since we mentioned it earlier.
The one that comes to mind now, and it's come up with one, because it's kind of like music. I like different aspects of what different people do. I'm compelled by Carriers. For people who don't know what Carriers is, check it out. But it has Cynthia Erivo, who's a really, really talented actor, is the lead in that. And I've been really compelled by her work in film and TV and how much range she has. And she's just a very compelling person that can anchor this whole show. But also the sound design in that show is just astounding. Like if you just put on your best headphones and just listen, it's just a buffet for the ears. It's so, they do great work on the sound and bringing that story to life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about you?
I would still probably say Life After, which mm-hmm. is actually by GE Podcast Theater, which you wouldn't really expect, but they made one of these a long, long time ago now, and they used it as kind of like a way to discuss technology and things like that without it being an advertisement for GE, you know? But the actual story in it's fantastic. It's a crime thriller about a man who loses his wife and kind of the aftermath of dealing with that.
Yeah, I love that show.
That was one of my favorites for the sound design, too. I really loved it. It was kind of minimalist for a lot of things, but it felt very up close. Like the main character puts headphones in often to listen to, voice recordings and things like that. And you can kind of hear that sound where you hear it yourself when you put headphones in, like that weird muffling sound as you put them in.
Yeah.
And just like hearing that through an audio drama was really cool, just to be like, oh, that's a sound that I recognize, and you know exactly what's going on in that scene, and it's part of brings me into loving audio drama.
To invite everyone who's listening, I really hope you enjoy the story. I think we put a lot of work into it, where I'm really proud of how it turned out. I look forward to hearing any feedback you have, and if this sparks debate and ideas about the issue, then let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to be doing a couple of different episodes. I mentioned them a couple of times already. We're going to be bringing on some cast and crew to discuss some things behind the scene, what the recording process was like, and everything like that. So I hope you stick around and check out all the rest of these kind of director commentary behind the scenes episodes.
Very cool. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.